Spawnily is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness because we are the culture. Welcome to Bricago, y'all.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is the Spawn on Me podcast with Khalif Adams. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. I hope you can hear me. I hope you are doing well. I hope you are having a magnificent start to your week. I am rocking, and as you can see, I'm sweating. It's hot up in this piece in the Bricago basement because global warming is coming up on that ass. It is finding people wherever it may be and finding them and baking them out and making them hot and sweaty. But I am excited because it's been a really great week. We have a lot of good conversations that happen on this episode of the show. If you missed last week's episode, please go check that out. We had the Iron Lords podcast on, rocking, doing it up. We had a couple of episodes actually on the feed. So we had our Iron Lords podcast, was phenomenal. We had the entire team on to talk about how awesome they are. And we also had our amazing friend Christy Pride over from Playcrafting to talk about all the wonderful things that they are doing. We have another double interview show on for this week. We're going to break those out into separate episodes and a full long one so that you have all of them completely there. If you're watching the stream here on youtube.com/spawnonme, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Please hit the bell. Please hit all the notifications so you can find out and subscribe when you can see more of our work here on all of the stuff that we're doing here on our YouTube channel. If you're listening to us on Spotify or any of the other podcast platforms around the planet, please make sure you're listening to the show. Please make sure you're subscribing there. And please make sure that you send us some reviews. 5-star reviews are the best. They make us feel happy and they make my beard grow in the best and most beautiful and luxurious way possible. It's already full because of all the wonderful things that have been shared about our awesome video game podcast that is now in its 10th year of existence. So, all that to be said, I'm hyped. We have a lot of good conversations to happen today. We're also going to talk a little bit about that Kai Cenat issue that happened with his PS5 giveaway back home in my city of New York City. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the show in the 411. But to start off our show, we're going to talk about what I think is a potential Twitch competitor in a website called LiveSpace. It was brought to my attention through a friend of the show, Alyssa Sweetman, who has been working with them and has been brilliant in her kind of explanation of what they're trying to do from a platform perspective and why, you know, they are kind of trying to be a player in this space when we've had, you know, a couple of new upstarts come alongside Twitch as the place to go if you are a content creator and streamer who's looking to get into the game and looking to share your content across multiple different layers and verticals and ways that you would kind of do that for a fan base that you are hoping to grow. And I was really intrigued about where LiveSpace was going to kind of be in that ecosystem and what they were going to do. And you'll hear in an interview that we're going to put up in a minute, you know, some really compelling reasons why you might want to think about joining that fray and jumping into that website. And, you know, a couple of tidbits right after that interview I'll share with you that Ali and I talked about and discussed and was shared across some other social media channels this week. In terms of one of the biggest conversations, which is monetization payouts and all of those things and revenue splits, which I think was really important and great to be able to dig into. So we have that as our first interview. And then second interview after our break will be me getting to talk to one of my childhood heroes in one of the biggest names in wrestling over the years, 2-time Hall of Famer, Double J, Jeff Jarrett. I got a chance to interview him literally minutes ago and talk about his inclusion in the newest game, WrestleQuest, coming from MegaCat Studios, that is coming out tomorrow. So make sure you're going to and cop in that. So we're going to talk to Alyssa first. We're going to go to a break. We'll talk to Jeff right after that. And I'll talk to all of you about all this Kai Cenat business. And I have some choice words for that conversation. But first off, let's get into our conversation with Alyssa, talking about LiveSpace and all the wonderful things that are happening there. Let's get into that right about now. What's good, everybody in Chicago? We have a fantastic guest with us here. Someone who I've been a friend, a person in the industry who I admire, someone who's been doing fantastic work for a long, long time, Alyssa Sweetman. Thank you so much for being here with me this afternoon to talk about all the wonderful work you're doing at Live.Space and so many other things that you've done in the industry over the years. Thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks so much for having me, Khalif.
Yeah,
I'm excited to join. I've been wanting to get on since I was at Twitch, but you know, Twitch has those strict policies around where you can talk, right?
So they kept us apart. That's what it was.
They were like,
we can't have all of this dope energy together in one space at the same time. We will not let it happen.
It could disrupt the space-time continuum.
I mean, we're
make the Flash a real possibility or something. I've been watching that.
We're always breaking things for good anyway, so it's good. We're always doing that work in that way. I want to talk a little bit about, in the beginning of our chat today, you talked a little bit about you working at Twitch. You know, folks who have been on the platform for a long period of time, you know, remember some of the work that you did there. But I want to give you a space to talk about all the goodness that you put out into the world and share that with the audience at home.
Yeah, I think it's inherent to doing good, difficult to talk about it because you kind of look at it as like doing the things you're supposed to. But a lot of the initial early diversity related work that Twitch did came from me. With no experience, it was very interesting fumbling around. If you actually look for Twitch's first Black History Month, they actually call it its legal name. We won't talk about that. you know, Women's History Month that same year when we launched it, I helped 1000 Dreams Fund ideate a grant that was to help women in the content space fund like particular things they might need, classes, new equipment, travel, because sometimes like going to just one convention could make or break your entire career. Which is so wild. And then a lot of people outside of Twitch know me, if you Google me, like from the charity related stuff. I'm really good at understanding why people donate to their favorite content creators fundraiser. And in turn, really great at understanding what entices a content creator or what things like are meaningful in those relationships. And so I spent a lot of time not only helping content creators get better at doing charity, but helping charity get better working with the creators on Twitch. And one of the last things I worked on before I left was the Twitch charity product, which was really cool. That's one of those things that was advocated for before I started at Twitch. And every year we wrote a new paper to advocate for it, to push for it. And so it was really cool to see it come to life right before I left.
Yeah. I mean, you have been integral in so many layers of what that work was over at Twitch and the folks who you're working with. And for me personally, you have always been an amazing ally to be able to get things done in not only, you know, the corporate structure of the Amazon, you know, creature,
yeah,
but also within that conversation around Twitch. So massive flowers and kudos to you for all the work you've done in that space, because I'll be honest, before that work was there, it was very, very hard to see ourselves on that platform in a much bigger and broader way. And I think the work you and so many other folks did really pushed that to the forefront. So it's cool to see that's here.
And I do want to say, like, no work is ever done solo. Yeah. Like at Twitch, even if it was something that like I picked up the mantle for, it was always easy to get people behind. The community marketing team was always a really great ally of mine. I don't know why I wasn't on that team. Like, so much of the work we did overlapped, but they were like, there are so many wonderful people that I care. And just because I'm not there anymore, I wouldn't want them to not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've always been impressed with your ability to look at a problem, give it a name in a real way, and to be able to talk about things in a very honest and knowledgeable and profound way that you've been able to translate the minutia of how to get a thing done to an audience that sometimes is very, very not ready to hear how the soup gets made, but is really excited about the potential outcomes, or sometimes not excited about the potential outcomes. How has it been, and what have you learned through that kind of work of how do you really translate the hard pushing the boulder up the hill to an audience that sometimes doesn't care about that and wants to really kind of just get the thing done? Well, how have you been able to kind of, you know, work through that?
I think that for a while I was in this constant state of I've got to do this. This has to get done. We can't concede on any of these issues. And I think I got to a state of burnout where I was really upset. I wanted to do right by the creators that I talked with and their communities and the people that I would have many conversations with. And I would want to be successful at work. You know, everyone wants to be successful. So I think the biggest learning from that was that sometimes people are upset at the history of a situation. And even if you make a small win, they're going to still be upset because in so many cases, a small win means you never move forward again. And being able to like separate, like, man, I understand you're upset, which is really hard. Like, I am an extremely sensitive person. And if someone's upset, I instantly go into problem solving mode, which I think made me the prime candidate for all of the work that I did working within the community. But also like realizing, getting good at identifying what people want out of something. And it doesn't sound the nicest or the most attractive way to say it, but sometimes you just got to do a really good trade. You know, like you got to be like Khajiit in Skyrim. You got to refresh your stock and see what works.
I did not think that I would hear on this podcast the correlation between getting the work done from a DEI perspective, a charity perspective, to the Khajiit.
I don't know why that instantly came in my head. Like, visually.
Why? I appreciate you so much.
And sometimes, you, even if like it doesn't feel like a win, I think the biggest thing, like in personal relationships, right? And I learned this, it was a big learning in my personal people to people relationships, is that as people are growing, if they grow a little bit, if they give you a little bit, if they do something and your reaction is, what about all of these other things? That will demotivate people from doing stuff. And I'm not saying from like a consumer to corporate standpoint that that's the same dynamic. It's not. But it is absolutely that, like, if the people making decisions feel like they never win or there's never an acknowledgement, then it can be harder to get those conversations going. And just kind of being prepared for like nobody to be happy. I kind of think about it like a good negotiator is one where everyone's a little unhappy. And I think in like diversity or activism based work, a lot of people are not happy, but you have to be able to say, all right, well, from a tangible perspective, we didn't used to have this at all. And now we have this. And I think I got to do some really cool stuff. I had budget left over 1 year and got to give money away to creators during Christmas time through the Fairy Mod Mother program. That's not my program. I just hijacked it for a week or two. Got to do really fun stuff because there are people that are willing to listen and they want to do. I think that there are just structures that prevent us. Like, I think we talk about capitalism very broadly, but every step of that system is meant to just maximize for money. And which is really interesting to me because there's so much research that shows being diverse, having more women in your business, having teams where there's more, that they make better decisions, there's more perspectives to look from. And I'm always shocked that people are surprised by this because if you have a conversation with your friends, say three friends that look alike, and someone else comes along and goes, oh, did you think about X? And then you're like, oh, wow, maybe I should have thought of X from the beginning because that sounds really simple. And everyone always thinks because once they hear someone else say it, it's simple. But it's just wild to me. Same thing with cause marketing. Every generation is more likely to purchase something if it's tied to a good cause, whether that be like, I don't remember if you remember when we were younger, when Toms launched the shoes.
Yep.
I remember being at school looking at these awful shoes. I tried a pair of my friends on. I was like, they're not even comfortable. And then she tells me they're $100. And I'm like, this is $100 like 20 years ago. And I was like, what? She's like, but a kid in Africa gets a pair of shoes. And I was like, okay, I guess I could see that.
Right.
And then, you know, Budweiser did the thing where if you buy a case of Budweiser, a case of water. And those things make people feel really good about their purchasing decisions, which sometimes, like, navigating this space, gaming is going to live service and more of this focus on money. And all of that is, like, about navigating and finding places where you can win and being really focused.
Yeah, I think the thing that I've really appreciated about your work and the teams that you have had, you know, purview over has been, you know, progressive spaces are really difficult because we are the staunchest allies and the most critical of the needle not necessarily moving or feeling like the needle hasn't moved at all. But it feels like we are constantly doing this thing in advocacy work of putting a little bit of medicine in the ice cream, right? Of like, here is the things that you will get if you move this way or if you nudge yourself this way, while worrying about the external forces that actually do a ton of harm to the communities that are underrepresented. Do you feel like looking at the space now that it's moving in a kind of better direction? Does it feel like it's still very fraught with the idea that, you know, if we're not perfect, that nothing is happening? Or does it feel like people are being more reasonable and more nuanced about the ways that you can do good and how that good is kind of being dispersed?
I don't know. I don't know if it's that because I don't care if... Like, I care if I make a mistake, but I'm not so worried about making a mistake. And I think that, like, maybe there's a maturity level in when you're doing this work and in this space, and we might be getting to that point across the space with people at different companies where they accept they can make a mistake and they kind of mentally prepare for when they do make a mistake and fix it. I think that we'll never get to a point where it's going to be all nuance. And the simple reason is that, like, a company or community manager or whoever, social media manager, is one person. And if you have 50 people in a room saying their opinions at one person that they messed up, it doesn't matter how nicely they say it, it still has a really negative impact. Mm. And so I think that, and it's important, everyone, but I don't think that, like, we'll be able to get to a place of nuance. And I was discussing with someone recently around how instant the internet is. You know, it used to be you send an email chain along, you'd play a game, you'd email the game back. Forums were much bigger than chat rooms. And what I'm noticing is, like, if I go to a forum, because it takes more time and you have to think it out and it's not a quick back and forth, they can have more nuanced places in places where they're not instantaneous. Mm. The instantaneous, I think, does impact. Of course, I don't have any research. This is just, like, an observation. And I think we may see people choose to speak out less. So in 2020, I felt like we went through this hyper period where everyone was like, influencer, what do you think of X? And then the next day I'd be like, what do you think of Y? Well, I want to know that you stand with C, but not B. And there's been some articles written about, like, the pressure of constantly being asked to speak on things. And I think it's a maturity level, like, and new creators come up every so often. So I think if the wisdom I would pass down to, like, the next set of people in gaming doing marketing is, one, like, obviously make sure that you're not just doing it and being like, because I'm doing good doesn't mean it can't be wrong. Mm. I think we get stuck in that. Someone does something and they're like, oh, that's going to land this way. And instead of, like, at work, they say, don't take feedback personally. It's about the work, not you. Mm. But we so inherently want to be good people that we take, oh, you know, that goes out. I know you didn't mean it that way, but that kind of little play on words actually has this really negative connotation because of X history. Mm. They're going to be like, oh, you're calling me a bad person. Nobody said that. And I think it's really natural for us because we all inherently want to do good.
Yeah.
I learned that from teaching, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I worry about that for our spaces too. It feels like, you know, that inability for folks to not make it personal or to pull in that information and be like, oh, that's an affront to who I am as a human being. We stagnate so many potential conversations and potential avenues for doing good because the spaces don't give you any grace at any of the levels that they need to, right? And I think you're also right. Like, I think that there's also, like, this interesting space that we're in right now, especially when we were coming out of the most, you know, locked down portions of COVID, where I think there is a real empathy deficit in the space, and not one that's, yeah, like, been put upon people, but, like, you can't have the energy of caring about every single issue all the time in the same levels, right?
So the New York Times published an article called Compassion Fatigue.
Yep.
It was like a deep dive in talking about it. And I think that's what happens when I get nonprofits who will ask me, well, this is really important. It's not less important than something else. And I'm like, I hear you, but this particular issue is an always on constant issue. And this is a disaster that happened yesterday.
Mm.
Like the number of things that got derailed fundraising because of the wildfires. And then COVID, which I think people forget that was the same year.
Yep. Yep.
Then we had the issues with we're still having the issues around women's healthcare and trans healthcare. Like we're still having those issues. And so when we have to fight those fronts, it's almost harder to fight any other front that we need to, like tackling cancer. Cancer is a thing we've kind of accepted as society as an always there, but it needs the money. And people will look at a big organization and be like, well, they got a big grant 2 years ago from XYZ company. That does not mean anything. It still needs to be funded. We still need to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But people get really exhausted. I mean, I had a leader at Twitch one time ask me how I dealt with the world. And this was a really interesting time when they asked it because I had just started working on myself more deeply. And I was like, honestly, like sometimes I am overwhelmed and I think, how are we ever going to get out of it? And I was like, so what I have to do is I have to shut it off. I have to not read the news for a bit, not look at the content because I follow mostly education, news, content creators. So like, I got to stay away from those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And like many, particularly Black and Indigenous women who I follow on social media, who are professional activists, that's what their day to day is, constantly remind you that you have to take breaks.
Yep.
And that you have to give yourself time to heal or you become a problem in of yourself.
Mm-hmm. It is so true. Like I think, and I love that term compassion fatigue because it feels like that. Like there's, and the interesting part is like there's an expectation for you to give the same amount of energy to each individual thing. And I don't think a lot of people who are in activist spaces check in on themselves at all because they're too busy.
Not in the content creation space.
Oh well, God knows that space is just unreasonable and great at the same time. Like there's just everyone is punching in every direction at the same time.
It's like a mosh pit. Content creation activism is like a mosh pit.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy for it because it is. Because you're like, I'm going to give you all these hands. And then you're catching all the hands from all the directions, too. So and you're trying to learn in that process, too. Like, I think that was a big learning for me throughout the past 5 to 7 years have been like, you know, I don't know everything and I shouldn't know everything. And that's important that I shouldn't know everything, but I can get there. And it feels like a lot of that work of teaching that gets missed. Right.
I think the most important skill anybody could ever have is learning what questions to ask and learning how to ask them to Google. So it used to be someone would say something, I'd be like, oh, tell me more. Now I usually say, what keywords should I put in Google? Because sometimes it may be like, I can Google a thing, but there's so many things, SEO primed and everything now. So now my new question is, what keywords, 3 to 4 keywords, would you give me to make sure I'm on the right track? And I use that in Googling and I either look for those keywords or you frame the question with those specific keywords in.
Ooh, that's really good. Because that was a huge part of so many conversations in communities that we were in of the, I am not your mule. Don't ask me to be the person who is going to teach you everything. Here are the conversations you should figure out. Yeah.
Post that was really interesting. If you're a data scientist listening to this, I apologize. Maybe you agree with this, maybe you don't. But I think data is the new way to oppress in some ways, because they'll be like, where's the data for this? We as a human society are very intuitive. Human nature is very intuitive. And then people will say things like, give me the data that we need to do this diversity thing. Do we really need the data? Or is that like just the way, and it's not, they don't just do it for that. It'll be like, oh, we should fix this quality of life thing, but it'll like, you know, take 10 hours or 10 dev days away from whatever. And they'll be like, well, what's the data that says we need to fix that? And you're like, telling you as like a human and a user, And so I think that data can be really powerful and really good, but I think we're in a point where we have so much data all the time, and we can make that data say anything we want because we've got what, Tableau, and Mode, and all of these fantastic tools. And then the data, I follow some accounts that do data memes that are like, can you put this in a fancy dashboard? Can I edit that chart myself? And I think it's like very similar. We use that as a way to decide to do or not do something, because if we use data, then we won't feel like we're doing wrong. I was at a summit around doing good at the Gates Foundation, and I met this gentleman who kind of believes in effective altruism, which at first glance, it uses all of the right buzzwords, effective, good, long-term. But when you really dig into it, they basically want to use a computer to decide what problems should be tackled and how. And early on, one of their arguments were, instead of giving malaria vaccines, we'll give everyone nets, like mosquito nets, because they're cheaper. And that example of like a computer deciding the cost-benefit analysis there didn't take into account, what about when they aren't sleeping inside their mosquito net?
Right.
And all of the other factors around it. So, and when I was talking to him, we got down to the nitty gritty of it. And he kept saying, I just don't want to make the wrong choice. And if you think about when you give money to someone you see on the side of the road, you're so concerned with how they're going to spend that money, and it's not the right choice. And I don't know when or how we got to this place of doing the right thing means to me to make sure that we're doing it right, because I've found the most effective ways to help people are the things you're never going to feel good about. Introducing someone to someone else and staying out of that conversation and never knowing if it benefited them, you don't know if that, you're like, cool, I made that introduction, and you may not know ever if it was good for them. It could have been extremely good, and you might never know. And that's the most effective thing you can do for someone in their career, is make an introduction and then get the GTFO away from it. But so many people are worried about doing it wrong. I was mentoring this girl, and I introduced her to someone, and she messaged me. She goes, do I need to keep you on the email chain? And I was so confused. I was like, why? She's like, well, I've had people introduce me, but they asked to see the conversation. I was like, no.
Yeah.
I was like, now it's your time. Whatever. Now it's your contact. Like, if that relationship for y'all two blossoms and y'all have, they hire you or they do this or that, I was like, that has nothing to do with me now. I just did an introduction. And I think like we want to feel good about what we do. It's why a certain mega creator's content is really popular.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how all of that works. And also, like, it, you know, I am not like on team capitalism is great. It's that's not my vibe. But it's also like an interesting balance of like, I'm not in that camp. I'm also not in the eat the rich camp. I'm also not in the like, you know, any charitable or that kind of work that comes from some folks who have a crazy, ridiculous amounts of money. All of that money is terrible and it's bad. Like, I think that there are layers to all of that stuff that speak to what you're talking about. And I think there is a space at the end of that road where someone hopefully potentially has benefited from that kindness. It doesn't have to be altruistic to get things done.
We also label everything, right? Like, doing good, donating to charity. At the same summit, there is Desiree Attaway. I'd never heard of her before the summit, but she did a talk on how do you define generous? And she talked about the history of the word generous, meaning of noble birth. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. And then she goes on to talk about its evolution. And they were like, when your poor friend gives you $10 because you need $10 for something, do you think of that as generous or your friend helping you? Would someone they were like, but when you think of someone giving $10,000 to someone, you would call that generous. Or someone who's really wealthy or really busy giving you their time, you would call that generous. And so she said, we have a system in which we baked into our language in which we know where to look up, and that teaches us where to look down.
Interesting. I mean, I think it's, I don't even know if I rock with that, because that's one of those, it's a good point, because I think the interesting part about all of that is it, at a certain level, it really depends on how you do that look up and look down and how you understand humans, right? Like, I personally, you know, have been in this industry for a long time. I've met heads of companies. I've met people who are on the street. everybody poops in my mind. I'm like, everybody has to go to the bathroom. And you you're not that special. Like, you are the person who runs this company. This person is homeless. So, at some point, everybody got to poop. And that means that, like, you're all the same in a certain aspect. So I don't, like, have that hierarchy when it comes to things.
But I'm, like, realizing that that is largely because I'm neurodivergent. And when I was a kid, I didn't necessarily recognize authority as, like, a thing you auto-respected.
Right.
I recognized authority as they have power. And that got me in trouble a lot. Also, like, admittedly, not recognizing how to, like, navigate those in a corporate space wasn't very helpful either. But
that's me raising my hand now. That's me.
But I think about language a lot, probably because of the struggles I've had being neurodivergent and communicating around the way words work. And someone recommended a book that if you are on a feminist journey of any kind, I highly recommend. It's called Word Slut. Mm. And it talks about how the English language is inherently made for the patriarchy. And it talks about how evolution of language, and I think language matters. And I think that's when we talk about games and representation and content creators, that's why it's so important is, well, people are thinking about their intent when they use a phrase, but intent isn't nearly as important as, like, the impact. And my favorite thing is, I don't care what a word means. Tell me what it makes you feel. Like, the connotation of a word or a phrase is so much more important. Like, it doesn't really matter what it's defined as if a bunch of people feel one way about it and that's not related to its definition.
Totally. I agree with that. I have that conversation with a lot of folks often about the impact versus intent conversation. I wish that intent had a space that was more graceful because not everybody else is trying to be the devil. But it is one of those conversations of, yeah, if it hurts a bunch of people, what you said, you should really do that internal audit to be like, yo, what was that? Where did that come from? What's the space in which that occupies for you? I want to talk about live space because I got a chance to play around with it a little bit. And it's a really interesting platform that's kind of bubbling up now where we see this is kind of like the perfect time for any new service to come, any new platform to hit, is because everybody's mad at Twitch. For some reason, everybody's like, Kick is the new potential place to go. And everybody who has been on TikTok and YouTube is still kind of doing their thing. Give the folks at home a little information about LiveSpace and why this is now bubbled up and why you've decided to do some fun stuff with them.
Yeah. So I really miss working with creators. I do client strategy at my day job. And while I love that, I do, like, miss the day to day with creators. So I was like, what can I do? Kick's a startup. I kind of looked at them. LiveSpace, I kind of discovered within this realm. And what drew me to LiveSpace is they are a live streaming service. So you just, like, you go live on Twitch, you can go live on LiveSpace. But to me, what makes LiveSpace so interesting is they're trying to build a place where creators can engage with their community online, like during their stream and not on stream. In one place where your one follow counts for all your content type, where you can have subscriber-only posts, where you can build and interact and engage with people. And so the discovery also isn't only when you're live. Like, it's never great to use competitors or other brands as a way to describe it, but it's the easiest shortcut. And so the shortcut would be, imagine Twitch plus Twitter plus Patreon in one platform. In one space. You go live, you're offline, you post content, you can engage, you can get discovered. Someone follows you because they saw a funny post. Now they're following you for your live stream. So those types of things, I think, like, creators right now, as at VidCon last year, and everything was like, you can monetize your community. And I'm like, there's plenty of ways to do that. I was like, and then people, you've got, all right, join my Discord, join my Twitter, join my this. And so not asking creators to, like, abandon where they're at. We would never do that. Like, the economy, the internet, everything is unstable as we know it. Like, Twitter's not even Twitter anymore. I don't know what timeline this is. I refuse to call it anything but Twitter. Right. So it's a real interesting time. And for content creators, to me, we have instantaneous connection. We have hyper monetization. For me, the next frontier, the way I see it, is stability and safety. And if you look at, like, the largest segments of people on content creation platforms and where culture gets driven, like, it's not a secret, Black women drive culture on the internet every day. And I feel like if the space isn't safe for Black women, for Black trans women, it's not a space that's going to really thrive long term, or it's only going to share the same kind of overlapping pool as other places. And live spaces are like, oh, we're going to come in and take all of Twitch's audience. Like, we want to grow the pie. And we don't view, like, you can create on live space without streaming. And I think that's really important, because if you're somebody who wants to go live once a month, getting people to return to your stream after not engaging with you is really hard. But if they've been engaging with you on the platform, on the service already, then you go live for your once a month stream, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, that makes a bunch of sense. I think, and I love what your thoughts were about the safety layers of that and kind of signaling that out. There was a great blog post that you all put out and the team put out, and there's a section that says, where does live space stand on? And I wanted to read a quick blurb from it that says, we aspire to be the most inclusive creator service ever. However, it is important to note that LiveSpace is not a free speech platform. We firmly stand by the principles that Black Lives Matter, trans rights and human rights, and that disabled people exist. It is rare to see any platform of any size say that loudly and proudly and plant that flag in that way. There's more to that to that section. But just seeing that alone as this is what we mean and we say it in our the way that we're thinking about our pillars for what we're doing. What does that mean for you as a person who's been a person who's advocated for so long to be able to do this kind of work in that way?
So I'll tell you, it was so relieving. Usually when you write these types of phrasing, you want to write it in a way that sends a signal to one group, but if they're not paying attention to it, they don't notice you're being inclusive. Like, that's often how a lot of companies try to, because they're not trying to attract the wrong type of attention. Mm. So when I wrote this so like boldly, they actually didn't comment about it at all. They just fixed some like grammar in the thing, and there was not even a discussion point. And I was like, yeah, this is the place for me. Because I understand, like, real talk, not everyone is going to feel those things. And maybe they don't get banned on the platform, but if they're hateful about it, if they're spewing misinformation, like, that's not a space for them. And it's because the spaces that you create on spill into other. It's not in isolation. It's not like you're sitting at home when you're being hateful all by yourself. It has real world impact. Mm-hmm. We've seen this time and time again with violence that starts up. We've seen this with stalkers. We've seen this like so many times. And with a lot of discussions in the creator space around people wanting to be seen and be heard, every time there's a new content creator service or platform, everyone's like, well, is this going to be a safe place for me? And so we didn't want people to have to guess if it was going to be a safe space. It doesn't always mean like just knowing what I know about moderation and dealing and seeing how those things, it doesn't mean that every action we take is going to, everyone's always going to agree with. I know that just I don't even know what we could possibly do wrong, but I just know we will. But that's the direction we want to move on. In that same section, we also wanted to acknowledge like adult content creators or sex workers, and that we respect that they exist, but like the service is 13 plus. So like that content's not accessible or allowed on the platform. So we're trying to be like as respectful and inclusive of as many people as possible, but you know, if you, as they say on the internet, if you fuck around, people are going to find out.
Yeah, no doubt. But I appreciate and love the fact that, you know, you got to craft this language in a real way. Like, I think so many of the platforms that we've both used, come from, have worked with and done all that stuff, it has often felt like the messages are there, but the actions have been a little bit fraught and have not necessarily lived up to the letter of the law as opposed to the intent of the law. And yeah, it's, again, rare to see a platform say it out loud that, like, no, this is what we mean. This is what we're trying to incorporate into our platform from the beginning. And I hope that keeps people off platform who would have necessarily tried to come on and try to ruin it in those early ways. Does it feel like, when you share this to folks who are in communities that we care about, that they're like, oh, hell yeah. Like, this is what we hope for.
So I was actually really concerned about like the section where we talked about technology, because that's a really hard conversation to have, like at scale or even with like the nuances that go in to it. So I was actually really worried about some of the things in there about like how people might react, just like we were talking about blockchain and AI and emerging technology. And our stance wasn't an overwhelmingly no. It was like a really nuanced piece. And that was the part I was worried about. I kind of expected people to kind of gloss over like the where does Live Space stand on, but I saw some people taking screenshots and underlining it, and they were like, this is where I'm going. And so that's really exciting to me, because there is a lot of content creators out there who are loud and proud and do incredible content, and I want them to see Live Space as a place for them. And so this is really exciting.
Yeah. I one of the things when I got a chance to kind of like mess around with stuff was it does feel like it's gaining traction, you know, getting its feet underneath it. And it feels like a place that, you know, once all the kind of machines kind of start to roll through, that it will be another avenue for people to really do content in a way that feels really special and important to them. I think the overall streaming space has gotten kind of into this weird, everybody's kind of doing the same exact thing. And it feels like with Live Space that there will be another avenue for you to do something that feels kind of more connected to community in a different way. I'm excited for that and excited to see how that's going to kind of land for you and the rest of the team. That's going to be pretty dope to see.
Yeah. And I think that because you don't have to always be live to be discovered or interact with your fans and community, I think it'll attract a lot of people who are maybe like, I'd like to do Twitch, but I don't want to stream every day. Or I don't want to like edit a video hardcore. And so I feel like this brings like casual content creation to a much more potentially sustainable place. Like the 85% split from day one is like, when they told me that, I was like, are you sure you want to do that? Like, I mean, I'll help you like walk it back. And they were like, no, we are dead set. And like, they have been hard, steady, and fast that day one, a content creator can go live, make money, and they get paid out right after within a very quick payout period, with no minimum. And that's really wild. I think that changes it too, because so many people in the creator space, like so many people in our country, regardless if they create content, are in a check to check, moment to moment situation. And now if you go live, get subscriptions, you know, you'll get paid out on those. You know, advertising will work a little bit differently, of course, just because that's many systems. But as for like subscriptions, I think that's really big.
Yeah.
And then chances are like there's, you know, subscriptions carry over to the next month, and then you can post subscriber only on content, which I think is really exciting. And so I think I'm really excited for like the content creators who want to do something and feel more casual about it, because content creation's hard.
Nah, it's easy.
I say this as not the content creator on the call, right? I think it's hard.
Oh, I had hair when I started this. That tells you a lot.
Did you really?
Oh no, I was
oh, okay. I'm really gullible. Okay, so
I shouldn't announce that. Right? I had a fro when I started spawning on me. It was just now gone. I know we're almost out of time, and time has flown. Jeez. Tell the folks at home again where they can go to kind of start the process of learning more about the site and about the platform, if they wanted to kind of get themselves rolling onto the platform and get ready to do any of that work, where would they go?
Go to live.space. That's the whole website. Our name is Live Space, and it's actually kind of cool. Also, I like the Live Space actually feels a little easier to remember. It's not some random obscure thing. I think it kind of tells you about it. That'll take you to our website. You can read our blog posts. We have two up that we've put up in the last couple of weeks, one about like the vision and one with the roadmap and some like broader questions we've been asked. Check out the space itself. We also have a Discord. Anyone can join the Discord. We're going to start hosting like site community nights where we get everyone to play the same free game. Like Fall Guys is an easy one, so that it can feel like the early days. Like we want creators to come on with their communities and feel like they're creating the space with us, like, because that's important. It needs to be made with their needs and their wants in mind.
Yeah. And again, I would say the the posts that you have been sharing on the site and kind of, you know, sharing the pillars and sharing the vision has really given me another place to think about in terms of like, how do I find a new space to potentially do some content in a way that I wasn't able to do before? And it feels like the community is starting to bubble up and learn about what the benefits of doing that work on LiveSpace are. So I'm excited for you and I'm excited for the future of the platform to see what's going down and how we can potentially be a part of any of the goodness that's going to come from all the work that you're all doing. So if you ever need anybody to do anything about anything that you need, I'm here. I'm here to rock with y'all to make it happen.
You know, maybe we produce a monthly show in the future. I'm not a standard content creator, right? Like, I can do the podcast, but that's about it.
I
could be a guest. I couldn't produce my own. I tried that, not good.
we will talk about the best way to push the boulder up the hill. Figure it out. We'll have an amazing, you know, monthly podcast about all that. And then we could talk about all the other really fun stuff in the mix too. Allie, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate you. And you know how much I love you and your work. I think you're brilliant. You've always come to all of this work with such a good level of energy and knowledge and empathy. It's been so cool to see you continue to grow in all these spaces and continue to kick ass wherever you go. So
I wouldn't be anywhere without the growth of, you know, from content creators like you and many of the other ones that have spent hours on the phone with me. So, you know, like, I owe a large part of my growth to my time at Twitch and the creators I worked with.
Word. Make sure, is there a space so people can check out more of your work for you specifically? Is there a site? Is there a
link? I'm really easy to find by my name. I'm actually Googleable, which is kind of cool. But I have the same handle everywhere, A-L-Y-K-K-A-T, Alleycat. Anywhere I am, you can find it. I don't know how I've managed to keep the same handle everywhere. It's been pretty great.
Nicely done.
Even on the new social media places where you may be waiting for a code, if I'm there, which I probably am, it's the same.
Good. I'm happy that you're not Z-ing yet. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Everybody, Allie is amazing and brilliant. Make sure you go check out her work. Go check out LiveSpace. It's really dope. I've been playing around and checking some things out and poking around. You may see a stream up there very, very soon of us doing it up and making sure that we get some Spawn of Me dopeness on there. Until then, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with some more conversations about all the dope games we're playing, and we'll do that right after this. Hey everybody, Khalif here from the Spawn of Me podcast. Hey, we have been in the market for new PCs for a long time, and for our 10th year anniversary, the wonderful folks from NZXT have partnered with us in a collab to be our hardware sponsors. So if you are looking for a new PC to stream or to game in the best way possible, go check out nzxt.co/spawnofmebld and you'll be able to find a perfect PC for you, whether that be the Player 1 machine, Player 2 machine, or Player 3 machine. The ones that we're rocking for our new studio build. They have everything you possibly could need for the best PC experience on the planet. Remember to go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmebld and they will get you set up right. Much love and peace. Back to the Spawn on Me podcast, and thanks, huge thanks to our guest Alyssa Sweetman from Live.Space coming through and talking to us about the platform and all the goodness that is in there to be found. I think, again, I was really impressed not only with of course everything that Allie has been doing over the years, but you know, the ethos of what the space is trying to do, trying to make it really safe for people to be able to create content and to make things in the ways that they want to. And a thing that we didn't really get a chance to dig into because that information came out a little bit later was, again, the conversation that we broached around the revenue split, which was, you know, initially 85% will go directly to the creators, but a conversation that bubbled up in the past 72 hours has been that they have been thinking about, and that team has been thinking about, building a program where they're going to pick 1,000 creators of every level, big, small, medium. And for the first year that they're on, they'll get 100% revenue split. Like, they'll get all the money from subscriptions and all that. There's going to be some criteria that needs to be worked out, and the team is still continuing to figure out how they want to build that, message that, and pull people in. But there's going to be a space there where potentially you could be one of those creators and pull in 100% of your subscription-based revenue from the site, which is unprecedented. I've never heard of anything like this on any other site, which I think is something that is going to be brilliant for them as a hook to pull people in. And I think it'll let people really understand that they are trying to do this in a real big way. So getting to hear, and we'll hear more about that throughout the upcoming months. And as soon as we have more information about that, we'll be connecting with them to not only bring them back on the show, bring more folks from the team on the show, but talk about why and how this is going to work once that criteria has kind of been built into the space. So massive love to Ali for coming on the show and being really, really great as always, and dropping some gems on all of you at home. So make sure you go give her a follow and give her some love on the socials. But before we get into our next interview, I have to say, you know, we're going to be doing some stuff on our channels. Like, yes, we're here on YouTube right now. We're playing games on Twitch, but we may be doing some more stuff on Live Space as well. I think, you know, I want to be a part of that potential creator crew and seeing how that will potentially grow. So, you know, as an audience, I want to thank you all for being patient with us as we try some new stuff to keep ourselves nimble, too. I am always looking to learn new things and to find out how to get better at the craft of streaming and being a content creator and all those things. And that will mean that it may be a little bit of an ask of all of you to, you know, take the ride with us. But we hope that you'll have patience with us while we do that as well. Our next interview is about a game that I'm really excited about. It's called WrestleQuest from the amazing folks over at Mega Cat Studios. I've been playing this for review. There's a bunch of reviews that went up this week. The game comes out tomorrow, so be able to go check that out. But the reason why you're here is to hear the interview that we had with Hall of Famer and wrestler extraordinaire, person who I have watched over decades of his work in the squared circle, and getting a chance to talk to him was a thing I get to check off my bucket list as a big fan of the pro wrestling sport and of him and his work. Today, I got a chance to interview the one and only Double J Jeff Jarrett. And we're going to share that interview with you right about now. And take a listen, enjoy it. And we'll be right back with the 401 after this interview. What's good, everybody in Chicago? I am so happy and excited to bring to you one of my most exciting moments, because I get to talk to Hall of Famer, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, King of the Mountain, the man, the myth, the legend. Jeff, thank you so much for being here. You have no idea. This is a dream of mine to get a chance to talk to you. I'm excited to have you.
Oh, stop it, Kai. I appreciate you. Let me spend some of your afternoon with me. I appreciate it. I love your lower third. We'll take a chair shot anytime. I was going to ask if you could kind of edit that, but we won't do anything real time. I wish you would have kind of thought ahead and said, we'll take a guitar shot at any time.
Oh, yes, that's right. You know what? I can switch that out. I can do that.
See?
You know what? There's been so many chair shots in the news right now. It's been a conversation that's been happening. But I will fix that, and I will swap that out.
I'm kidding with you.
But first of all, the reason I'm so excited to talk to you today, besides, you know, just getting a chance to hang out with you for a little bit, is you're a part of one of the games that I've been really excited about this year. I think one of the things that I have been thinking about for a long period of time is having had some time with WrestleQuest some months ago. Yeah. And been a big fan of the work that Mega Cat has been doing, and of course a big wrestling fan. How awesome is it to get a chance to work in this space and do this kind of work with these wonderful folks?
You know, Kai, my family has been in the wrestling business for over 75 years. My grandmother got in the business. I like the edit that you're doing as I'm talking. We'll take a guitar shot at any time.
Yes.
But no, my grandmother, Christine Jarrett, got in the business in 1946. So just the evolution of the industry, our industry alone, is really, really cool. And, you know, the first video game I was in, it was in the 90s. Somebody earlier today said I've been in, I don't know, 9 or 10 video games. But to be a part of this game, a first of its kind. And look, I've been in a lot of, obviously, as you know, better than me, been in simulation games. And professional wrestling, you know, the term that's been thrown around is sports entertainment. Obviously, we're not true sport. We're scripted entertainment. But, you know, simulation games are more down the avenue of, I'll call it, the sporting side of things. Mm. But the JRP side, it truly is the essence of professional wrestling. It's storytelling. It's larger than life characters going on a journey, the highs, the lows, the ups and the downs, the good guy versus bad guy, babyface versus heel, protagonist versus antagonist, however you want to slice and dice it. That's WrestleQuest. And being emotionally attached to the game like I am from the very beginning and getting to be a part of it, not just as a talent, being alongside Macho Man Randy Savage and Jake the Snake and Andre the Giant, the Road Wars, all up. But, you know, I got that fancy title that they gave me, executive producer of wrestling. Who would have thought? But, no, I love it for so many reasons, but the authenticity of the game and how it's true to my form of entertainment, the worlds of JRPG and professional wrestling colliding, you get WrestleQuest, and I could not be more excited.
This game does feel like a love letter to the sport. And I think one of the things I love about it is all of the nuances that are there, from learning how to cut a promo to understanding what a shoot is, to understanding how to build your gimmicks up so that the crowd really gets into it. What was one of the first things that when they brought you onto the project, you were like, we got to make sure we get this part right? What was one of those things that came into play there?
That's an easy answer because, again, you know, what's your favorite sporting team, Kai? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I'm a Knicks fan by crying shame.
Okay, you're a Knicks fan. Oh, man, who's the gosh, they had a run this year.
Yep.
His dad's the coach.
Jalen Brunson.
Brunson.
Yeah.
Do you think Brunson ever walks down the court and says, you know what, I hope the crowd's cheering me or booing me? No. True sport, that is irrelevant, you know. I don't care what sports team you're on. You play to win. In professional wrestling, we know the deal. You want the crowd to be engaged. Mm. That is something in the game that how does the crowd – how is the engagement in our WrestleQuest world? And Zach Manko, he's the creative driving force behind it. James Deegan sits at the very top of Mega Cat. But just kind of that conceptual mindset of how do we make it as true as we possibly can? And that crowd engagement, it's not just about, you know, I call it mashing buttons and trying to do this. It's literally you're going to have to do things to keep the crowd on their toes and ins and outs and ups and downs. That's something that is authentic to my industry, and WrestleQuest does that.
I mean, the ebb and flow of the emotional layer of all of the work that you get a chance to do and have done so phenomenally for so many years has brought this kind of, you know, gameplay into that forefront layer of what I think makes this game super, super cool. How was it when they pitched you this to say, like, we want you to be a major part of this game and also kind of bring you onto the team? What was the first thing that they kind of, Mega Cat Studios, came to you with that was like, Jeff, we really appreciate you and love your work. We want you to be a part of this.
Oh, man, Kai. So I love to tell this story because me and James were having conversations in development about nothing to do with WrestleQuest. Huh. It was basically about gamifying a live event, some technology, and they're at the forefront of. And but that was the conversation. And we just kind of changed gears toward the end of the call, and he started kind of laying out WrestleQuest. And I said, wait. He said a few things. I said, wait, you have the IP of Andre the Giant? Like the Andre the Giant? You know, in my generation, it's like Andre, the man. And then he talked about Macho Man. And, you know, Randy was a partner of my father and worked for my father. And so, you know, there's some deep roots between the Jarretts and the Poffos and Savages. And I could go on and on. But when I kind of understood the IP, then understood the vision, if you will, of WrestleQuest, that's when I I hate to say it, I'm a fan first. I was emotionally connected to the game right then. I'm all in. And as things transpired, and look, seeing a Double J statue in the game is off the charts fun. But just the storytelling. And look, I can tell that you're a longtime fan and understand things. But, you know, every talent that gets in the business when they own their first pair of boots, their real dream is to make it to the top, to be sitting on the top of the wrestling world, no matter how you slice it and dice it. That's WrestleQuest. You know, Randy Santos works his way up, and you know, it's that real rags to riches story, against all odds, story of passion, perseverance, and persistence. That's wrestling.
I think one of the things that I really appreciated about playing the game, and I've been rolling through it for my review, has been that it feels like, also, besides being a love letter to the sport, it is teaching new people who may not necessarily be big fans about how the industry works in some small way. You know, you as one of my favorite heels over the years and doing so much great work. When you were coming up into the game, and you know, I know you have a long family legacy, what were some of the heels that you said, oh, there's a piece of this that I want to take, and a little piece of this that I want to take? And what was some advice that you got, you know, being a heel in the space to make people really want to come after you in the stands?
So a lot of folks, you know, you've really got to be an old-time fan, but there was one of my childhood idols growing up, the fabulous Jackie Fargo. And Jackie, I have several, but two that really resonate with me to this day was Jackie Fargo was a legendary babyface in the latter part of his career. In the early part of his career, he was a big time heel and very cocky and arrogant. But, you know, as a performer, Jackie, especially in his later years, he perfected the mindset of keep the audience entertained and laughing. And right when you are about to deliver, I don't want to say a punchline, but that's kind of the, you know, right when you want to make it, you know, the most entertaining or maybe the funniest or whatever it is, pull the rug out from undering and get them pissed off. And that's all about emotions, understanding your audience and the emotional engagement. And I think Jerry Lawler, to this day, if he's not the best, he's right up there at the top. The realism, the authenticity. I mean, when Jerry was a heel, when he was a bad guy in his early days coming up, he was a ruthless, no good, rotten. Everybody in the arena hated his guts, and that was his goal. That's always been my goal. I want to be the antagonist. So, you know, watching guys like that, I just think there's a real art to it.
I mean, there are some moments that I have in my mind, not only from you, but from some other superstars in the business. I remember very, very closely the Million Dollar Man and the basketball moment with Virgil.
Perfect.
And looking at it now, I was like, that is so good. Because I remember that moment, and I hated it as a small child.
Yes. It's so relatable. It's so relatable. You can relate to those things, you know, I'll say on the streets, at playground, at school, whatever it may be, you know, the Austin McMahon storyline through the years. Everybody can relate to a boss that you hate.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You know, everybody can relate to a Double J that you just want to smack the taste out of his mouth if you can. But you can't, Ka. You can't.
I know, baby. You'll strut right past him and hit him with one of those guitar shots, and it's all over for him, baby. I get it. I know we got a couple minutes left with you. Time has been flying. I think one of the other parts of your work that I think has been brilliant and I think translates well to the game is the ability to cut a promo. And I think you've been a master at that for all of your time in the game. Was there also a moment there where you were like, man, I just did something special here, and this feels like a moment that this promo is going to last beyond me? Do you remember having any of those moments?
In my career?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're talking about – well, you know, here's something that, again, we're kind of going retrospective, Kyle. You got me thinking deep today. That's the sign of a good interviewer. But, you know, what makes a lasting promo? And I'll say it relates to the game. And I wish Zach Manko was on here with us today, because he's the real creative driving force. But the thing that I kind of leaned into with him or with anybody I work with is, and this was taught to me as well, is make every word count. Don't be a chatterbox. Don't just ramble and all that. And look, I'm a long-winded. Sometimes my kids are like, "Dad, enough. I've heard you talk enough." But that's the parenting skills. But no, but when you look at Kyle laughing at me. But when you're making promos and in the game, every word and of the text that's on the screen is carefully thought out. It's edited. Like what really needs to be said in the most impactful way in the shortest amount of time. That's the sign of a good promo.
I love that. I love that. I got time for one more. And I think the thing I wanted to bug you about is for this game, for folks who are just coming to it and may not have that connection, that childhood connection to the wrestling world like I do and you do, what's one of the first things that you want them to kind of like mess around with in terms of the game, get a chance to, you know, go to some of those different worlds? Because I know that there are, you know, the lucha spots, the old Japan spots for wrestling. What's the thing that you want folks to kind of understand and check out when they play?
So here's something that I do believe, you know, we're talking to two audiences. Yeah. If we're talking to the gaming audience, the JRPG game, I'm not a hardcore gamer, but I've got the experts around me. But it is first and foremost a fantastic JRPG. It is a one for the ages that checks all the boxes, which I'm very proud to be a part of, that my world of professional wrestling kind of got to step a toe in that water. And we have all due respect that's what's out in front. It's a JRPG first and foremost. Wrestling is in the background. I completely understand that. So that makes me really proud to be a part of a game like that. On the flip side, if you're a JRPG fan, get it. If you don't even like wrestling, you're going to like this game. Mm. On the wrestling side, the real essence of whether you realize it or not, Kai, a wrestling fan loves our industry because of larger-than-life characters and the story. And what is the story that resonates to the end of time? Literally, it's breaking into the business, building block 1, 2, 3, working your way up a ladder. You may have to go in the lucha area, the hardcore area, the strong style Japan. You got to work your way up through that magic. And with over 40 hours, just literally 40 hours, that's not all the bells and whistles. It's a story. It is a true story that you can, Dash talent. Look, I'll talk for the next 3 hours on the different talent and the IP that's created, not just the Macho Man's world. I'm talking about the characters that are developed in this game. It is something. It's a real journey, and the proof's in the pudding. I think we've won over 20 awards, best in game. So we've come out of the gate hot, I'll just say this. This is, I'll say we're just at the launch, but the Quest launch is taking off. The DLCs to come. Dude, just wait, Kai. This, you're going to get sick of me by the time WrestleQuest, 2 years from now, you're going to say, "Jeff, I can't have you on. You've been on too much now."
I will never say that. You are welcome here on Spawn on Me anytime.
So Kai, I know we're running out of time. My brother. PR guy is going to get mad. I got to ask you.
Yeah.
What is your – are you a JRPG fan?
I'm less of a JRPG fan and more on the wrestling side fan. But
– okay.
Because the JRPG bits are really good in the game because I've had a chance to play some before review.
Yeah.
And I think that the combination of gameplay and everything that I love about wrestling matches extremely well here. And I think
that's what I wanted to hear. I'd like, what do you like about it? And so you, like I've said, the marrying of both worlds, it just works.
Yeah, I agree. And you heard it from the man, the myth, the legend, Jeff Jarrett. Thank you so much for being here with me and spending some time with me. I have so many childhood memories and even more now that you've been in AEW. And I didn't even get to half the stuff that I wanted to talk to you about the international scene and all the other stuff and the history stuff. But that moment where you and Flair did the strut off is in my brain forever. That will never go away. You have given me so many memories over my lifetime of being a big wrestling fan, and it is a pleasure to have you on Spawn on Me. And you have a seat whenever you want one on the show. You're down.
Kai, I appreciate me on, and without a question, after I'm finished with this interview, you definitely need to take a guitar shot.
I will take one. I will find you. I'll get to a show, and I'll be like, Jav, hit me with a guitar.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother. Thank you so much for being here. Everybody at home, we have to go check out WrestleQuest. It is amazing. It's coming out tomorrow. You'll be able to check it out, download it, and snag it and play it. And you get to hang out with the man, the myth, the legend, Jeff Jarrett, in the game as well. So until then, we'll talk to you in a little bit. We'll be right back after this. Yo, shout out to Double J Jeff Jarrett. What a ridiculously dope interview. Like, it's one of those things, man, when you get a chance to talk to folks who are crossing their elements, right? Like, you know, Double J is huge in the wrestling space. You know, he's been doing that work forever and has just been so good at each and every part of it, from the physicality to the promos to the messaging to all of that stuff. And to hear him talk so kind of passionately about the gaming space really did impress me a ton. And it was really, really cool to be able to see that. And again, to get a chance to talk to one of the best people in the business to ever do it is a rare thing to say you get a chance to do. And I get to check that off my bucket list in a huge way. We're going to go right into the 411, and we're going to talk a little bit about Kai Cenat right after this bumper. Oh. So this week on the 411, we're going to talk a little bit about the madness that happened in New York City a couple of days ago. The folks who were here in YouTube.com/wannabe heard me do my bah, and they're like, what the hell was that? Anyway, it was a wild thing that happened this past week, earlier this week or early during the weekend. Kai Cenat, one of the biggest streamers and entertainers, influencers on the world, from the AMP crew, went out and shouted out to his millions of followers that he was going to be in New York City and that he was going to do a giveaway of some PS5s and some consoles in the middle of Union Square. So if you're not a New Yorker, if you've never been in New York and you don't understand where Union Square is, Union Square and 14th Street and 6th Avenue is basically a major hub for transportation. It is a place in which a couple of different trains on the east side converge. It is a kind of middle ground for midtown Manhattan. That's still kind of Manhattan, midtown Manhattan, lower Manhattan, more closely in the Chelsea area, Chelsea district. And it's a tightly packed space. This is a place where, you know, I would go to meet people. It's like it's a space in which a meeting point is there to be had. It is also a place in which many, many protests have happened over the lifetime of protests in New York. It is a place where people will start a protest and move to another location. It is a place in which there's some commerce there. There's some big stores there, and, you know, Whole Foods and a bunch of other stuff, if they're still there. At least that was what it was when I was there. And Kai Cenat said, I have a great idea. We're going to do a giveaway of PS5s in the middle of the street in a car, and we're going to have millions of people bum rush downtown Manhattan and give away some consoles. And if you're a reasonable human being, you understood from the beginning of that conversation that was really stupid. That was not only stupid, it was amazingly dangerous. You have a bunch of young adults who are looking for free stuff that you can't accommodate, because there's no way, with the amount of people in New York and the amount of people in the following that you have, to be able to corral that in a way that's reasonable. If you do it in the way that he did, he basically did the thing that you saw, you know, people do when it was like, you know, we're going to set up this car, and then people, if you don't have any food, we're going to give away some turkeys and some food during Thanksgiving. And first come, first serve are the people who are going to get stuff. This was one of the most dangerous things you can do as a creator. And it wind up turning into a full-fledged riot. Kids were getting beat up by cops. People were getting trampled. People were getting hit by, or at least, you know, falling off of Kai Cenat's car and his entourage's car. There were a ton of things that happened during the conversation of this moment that happened for him and for his entourage. And it really does bring about some conversation that I think we need to have about Kai Cenat's work. And some information and some conversations about not only his, but there's this grouping of professional screamers who do this thing every couple of years where you see someone who is a Kai Cenat, or you see someone who is a XQC, or you see someone who is a iShowSpeed do one of these events with little or no forethought to any of the people who are going to be here and involved in this moment. It is extremely dangerous, and it's weird because it shows just how little a lot of these folks think about their actual fan bases. They are willing to put, and this is me talking directly to y'all as fans, he is willing to put your lives at risk for the sake of clout. End of story. This was a move about clout. This was a move about making a moment happen that would go viral. This is about a person who is too young and not smart enough to think about the repercussions of what this means for you as a human being and as a fan of their work. For them to put your life in danger because they understand that most of the cats who are out here can't afford a PS5 or can't afford a console or want to be a part of the moment, and didn't do any of the thinking that went along with how do we make this safe for people? How do we make this into a thing where people can actually enjoy it? How do we make this a thing where our fan bases don't get beat up by the police in a state, in a city where over-policing has been a thing for decades? For decades, this has been a problem that has happened within the New York City space. Kai Cenat is from the Bronx. He should know this. He has millions of dollars to set up a proper giveaway, a proper place where people can come and do a meet and greet, and you give them a console and you say, here, I appreciate you as a fan. Let me make sure that I'm going to give you a space to be able to be safe and a space to understand that you as a human being have feelings, emotions, and needs that have nothing to do with clout and nothing to do with the moment of us being on top of a car and being hype and giving out money and throwing out dough and all that kind of stuff. I was really mad about this the other day because it just shows me again that there are people on this planet who, no matter how much they have and no matter how much clout they get and how much visibility, it doesn't matter. You don't matter to them in that way. It's one of those conversations that need to happen across every creator and every management team and every person that has gotten a large amount of following to say, with, like Spider-Man said, it's the easiest thing to remember, with great responsibility comes great power. And I'm sorry, with great power comes great responsibility. It is not that difficult to understand. You as a creator, I have to understand every small logistical thing. And if you are not smart enough to do that, spend the money to get people who can do it for you. You have every resource on the planet at this point. You have no excuse for being able to put something like this out in the street and have people get hurt because of your ignorance and stupidity. It is unreasonable for this to have happened in New York City. I've seen a lot of outlets softball this. Oh, this was a moment. This is what happens in New York. None of this stuff happens without forethought. If you put a little bit of forethought into the process, none of this happens. If you put a little bit of thought process into this and a little bit of programming and a little bit of understanding, no kid gets his head thrown through a window of the back of a cop car. I mean, of a cab. Which is a thing that happened. No one falls off of your entourage's car because you didn't have enough forethought. Now, Kai Cenat, after this, got arrested for inciting a riot. And all I can say is good. It's not, and you have no one to blame but yourself for that. He'll get bailed out. He has enough money. Whatever will happen, will happen. This will be another thing that we'll see on the secondary YouTube channel that will not be the main channel. You'll see someone pop this up onto the thing and be like, yo, this was a moment where all of his fans got together and something good happened. There was no good that happened here. Kai, a major star, for whatever reason, I still don't understand it, got paid. Somebody on the team, like, he did this out of the kindness of his heart, but did the worst way you possibly could do it. Now he got an arrest for no reason, which doesn't make any damn sense. Now, if you ever really wanted to do an event in New York, you have to go through a lot more protocol to be able to get that done. Three, you'll have dumb people in the fan base who will go back and go support it, because that's the way that most influencer conversations work these days. And four, now you have to worry about all the potential legal ramifications for what this means for you and your team. There is probably someone in that crowd who got hurt who could sue him. Probably could be able to be like, look, I was in this space and this person made this thing. And I would say, you would deserve it. If someone were to press charges and be like, yo, this person helped to incite a riot. I was just walking down the street going to work and I got bopped in the head by a cop. You could probably get, there's probably some repercussions for that. All of that to say, because I won't keep this long, is we have to figure out good ways for people who are doing this work to be able to understand the repercussions of what this means for them as creators. You have to understand that there is a layer here of work that needs to happen for all of those people to be able to say, this thing that you were thinking about and trying to do is not smart. We need to take a step back, plan this better, figure out the best ways to engage the city and to engage all the layers of it and do this the proper way. The fact that he was looking at the cops being like, well, what did I do? Like, what happened? I don't know what happened. Tells me that you have too much money and not enough time. And tells me that you have a lot of people in your circles that don't give a shit about you either. And don't care about the product and don't care about the repercussions and don't care about the safety of your fan base that gave you the money that you are spending on them right now. These are simple problems to fix. These are simple issues. And you see this happen across multiple people in the influencer space, where you have people who have way too much time and way too much money to be able to do this work and have no adults around them. And they have no adults who are looking at these instances and looking at these problems and saying, you don't need to do this because this is stupid. This makes no sense. Doesn't make sense for your legacy. Doesn't make sense for your image. And the problem is not because of the lack of adults. It's because the space allows for it. And they get championed by the same people who are the ones who just got their asses beat in the streets of New York. The same people who will be the ones that get hurt are the first ones to turn up and throw a super chat and throw a Twitch sub and talk about how that was the best thing on the planet and it was the dopest thing that they were ever in because they got to be a part of a moment. That's a problem. That's a bad problem to have. It's a problem that we see in the space. And I hate it as a creator who is sharing spaces with all of these folks, because what it does is it makes my job harder for me to get people and other people to galvanize around certain things. Because as soon as you say something, people call you a hater and be like, oh, that cat doesn't have as much as you, so he's a hater. I want everybody to win. I am happy that this young black man is doing what he's doing in this space as a fellow Bronxite, as a fellow black man from New York. But I also look at a lot of stuff that he does and I don't understand the appeal, and I don't understand why people spend money on it. And I don't understand why people rock for a thing that literally has gotten people hurt. And we'll see more of this happen in the future. We'll see more of this happen in multiple spaces. And no one will say a goddamn thing because they don't want to be called a hater. And they also don't want people to be like, well, you just hating on him because you ain't got enough clout. I've been in the game way longer than a lot of people. I have not reached the heights that he has reached. My work speaks for itself. But that conversation and this conversation are different because I would never put an entire group of human beings in freaking danger because I wanted to do a clout move. It's stupid. Anyway, that's the 411 for this week. There's a lot of conversations to go into the mix there. We're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing as well in some other places and some other conversations that are going to be happening this week. There'll be a secondary show because there's a lot of conversations that are going up and some content that I need to put out this week around a game that you are really, really excited about and definitely want to check out very, very soon. So make sure you're checking out all of the Swan and Me channels. I'm going to go take a shower because it's hot and sweaty in the Bricago basement, but I want to thank each and every one of you for showing up today here on youtube.com/spawnonme. I want to thank everyone who has been a part of our show for the 10-year run that we've been doing this. We're almost at episode 500. We're almost knocking on that door. Massive love and shout out to Alyssa Sweetman for coming over and coming and hanging out with me from live.space, LiveSpace, and the number one man, the myth, the legend, Jeff Jarrett of AEW and of multiple Hall of Fames, and now of WrestleQuest from Megacat Studios for spending some time with me and talking to me about wrestling and video games and all that stuff. What a world, what an existence, what magical nonsense is this show. All right, we're gonna get about it here for this week. We have a lot of stuff to push out for the feeds. We're gonna be breaking this show up into each of those interviews and then the full interview, so you'll have multiple ways to consume it. And also, please give us some love on Twitter. Give us some love on both of our accounts on Twitter. We're looking to expand that, even though Twitter is going down the drain. We still have some cool stuff happening over there. We love for you to engage with the content there as well as Spaces and Instagram, all of those places as well. Before we go, Arctic asks, did you join live.spaceca? Absolutely, I did. We already have an account over there. So when we do go live over there, make sure to go check that out as well. We'll put the links out and all that kind of stuff. And again, shout out to our friends over at NZXT for being our hardware sponsors for our show and for all the goodness that we have here. So until then, much love to you all. Wash your hands, wash your butts. We'll see you all next week and little this week with some more content coming to you from Spawn and Me. Much love to you and peace.